Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
And welcome back to another episode of Kicking It with Kidneys, a forum to discuss important topics for historically suppressed voices within the African American, Latino, and Native American communities. Now, last week on episode 12, we asked the question, is the occurrence of chronic kidney disease within communities of color self-inflicted, or is it a generational curse? The panelists and I concluded without a doubt, the adaptations of food patterns and practices during slavery created an unhealthy food culture in addition to the economic disparities of the poor and uninformed. We also took on the myths and facts as it relates to how liable minority patients are for the developing higher prevalences of chronic disease, long-term illnesses, and how much responsibility actually exists in the sustained practices of institutional racism. So joining us today, okay, to help discuss this topic, we have our KIWK crew. We have Marion Wilson, Maria Jimenez, BJ Simone, Sarita Scarborough, and of course, Rita Williams. So BJ, what is the word on the street?
We decided to do something different with Word on the Street. After some discussion and self-reflection, the respondents today will be us, the panelists. And so the question is, what are you doing to promote awareness about the harmful effects of chronic kidney disease in your community? And I'll start off. Okay. I'm new to working with the dialysis community, but in previous efforts to improve conditions within communities of color, that was primarily channeled through my employment and my church activities. And that gave me an opportunity to work with outreach groups, to teach wellness classes, to be a part of neighborhood watch organizations. But in the past few years, because of personal reasons, I have to admit my basic contribution to community involvement has been financial. And I recently relocated into a community that has its share of problems. And I'll be honest with the group, I wasn't sure how involved I wanted to be. But working with this particular group has renewed my interest. And I think the most important thing for anyone is to find a cause that you believe in, that you're interested in, and that you can commit to. Because if you don't commit, then I'm not really sure how much help you're going to be able to provide.
You know, as minorities, getting our health wellness back and preserving cultural consciousness appear to be secondary. But remember, we are all in this boat together. We have gone from a culture of we, where we think about things and people about or around us, to a culture of I. What's in it for me? We need to get back to the we culture, where extremes are no longer dominated. You know, we are all in the same boat together, and we must row in the same direction. So let's start with Maria and Marion. What personal testimonies, Moniz, can you share about initiatives, old or new, that you have had a positive influence, that have had a positive influence on the population of patients that you provide services for?
I'll start, Maria. Okay. When I'm working with a new patient, what I've learned to do is to challenge the patient, providing them with education. Oftentimes at the end of the teaching session, they will voice some positive affirmation and stating that, wow, I wish I had known this sooner. Perhaps I wouldn't have this current situation. And I challenge them by saying, you do have family members, individuals that need the same information. Now that you know better, you will do better, but you also have a responsibility to share this information with your family, those that you interact with in your church or on your place of work, individuals that you have contact with. You now have a responsibility to share the information. So that has been most effective.
Okay, and Maria.
And for me, you know, becoming a registered nurse, it's all about, you know, patient care. But with patient care also is the responsibility of nurses to educate their patient. Again, I keep saying when you know better, you know, you do better. Mm-hmm. So I don't just act as an autopilot nurse. I don't just go in and put them on the machine and then leave them. I have hands on with my patients at least 3 times a week. To where I can give them all the education information that they need. I'm also lucky enough to be able to see these patients in a home setting with their family. So as they're getting, you know, their education, the family is getting their education as well. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, my education and experience with patients is at a stage 5 dialysis level. So there's probably things that I could do more for pre-renal. But, you know, in the past, since we're talking about what we've done, old and new, I'm a member of the sorority Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. My soror Marion is as well. I mean, in those groups, we did a lot of things, you know, with hypertension and diabetes and stuff like that, whatever our initiatives were for that year. So that's the past and, you know, doing things now with my dialysis patients.
Yeah, you had to get those AKNs, don't you? Okay, so Sarita, Hispanics are the majority minority in the U.S. today. So what measures have you personally implemented to bring about awareness for those patients? Okay, and can you provide for us a step-by-step formula for success with future generations?
Sure. What I've done, like everyone else in the panel, is really gone to the education of our Hispanic families. Like Maria says, when we get our patients, we don't get that opportunity to do the pre-dialysis assessments and all that kind of stuff, or, you know, help the patients before they come to the unit. But what I do is, you know, I'm a different bird, you know, with different feathers. But my assessments, I really individualize those. I've been lucky enough to work in units that I'm able to do that. So I know that those questions are basic questions. But I really break it down for them, especially our minority families, because they're, you know, and then I also work a lot with mental health for our families, all of them, but especially our minority families, because it's such a taboo in our culture about going to see a counselor. But they forget that every day they see me, I'm also a counselor too, but I'm non-threatening because I'm the social worker.
Yeah.
So they don't realize that, you know, I do assessments as well. And they're like, oh, really? You're counseling me? I'm like, well, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And I have the opportunity, like Maria says, to be able to see our patients in the center. And I'm able to get to know them on a one-on-one basis. It's not just a drive-by. I get to know our patients. I get to do home visits, which is awesome. Not everybody likes that, but I do. I love going to see the patient where they're at. One of the other things I really enjoy is implementing family meetings. I think it's very important to do that, to rally the family behind the patients. I mean, sometimes we have patients that come into the clinic and you never see a family member. You know, they may drive themselves or they may, you know, someone brings them, you know, some kind of transportation. And then you talk about, you know, you talk with them and you're like, what about your support system? Oh, yeah, I have a good support system, my family. But you never see them. Mm. So when something does come up, I'm like, you know what? What if I call a family meeting if they are coming, you know, something's coming up? I love to use family meetings because sometimes we come up with resources that the patient didn't even know they had. Yes. So those are kind of things that I do. So step by step, I take it what you would call individual. I mean, I don't say, well, this assessment's going to fit everybody. Mm-hmm. I individualize it. That's something that I like to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, Sarita, you should have a problem with those AKAs talking trash. Okay. What you got to say about those AKAs hauling out ski weed and all that?
Well, I don't have a problem with them, because at the end of the day, we're all a part of the divine nine. And so
sisterhood, that's
to my AKA Sarahs in the struggle, shout out from Z5B, 100 years old, finally. But, you know, we're about sisterhood scholarship and sisterly love and final womanhood. And we're a community service action oriented organization. And so we represent the blue and white proud. I only thing that I would say is that, especially to Madam Maria over there, that the only constitutionally bound brothers and sisters are the ladies of Zeta Phi Beta and Phi Beta Sigma. So you know, and my family is alpha big time, but you know, that's fake. That's fake brotherhood. We got the real thing, blue and white over here.
I knew it. So Sarita, so what contributions have you personally made? And from an economic perspective, what contributions can everyday folk make to ensure growth and sustainability of our race? You know, we're at 13% already. And if we keep getting wiped out by COVID and chronic kidney disease and all the other disparities, I think our race will be extinct. So your analysis.
I think we've covered the sorority. I would say from the essence, my high school. And so I'm going to give a shout out to the Maddie Jack Gates Lions class of 1987. Absolutely, because we do things. In fact, just about a week ago, we did a fundraiser and scholarship drive for the George Floyd Memorial, as he was a member of our high school. I would also say with my lodge, you know, that would be the Order of the Eastern Stars, Bethel Star Chapter 389, where we reach out and work with the Masons that are a part of our organization as well to give back to the community. And we do it all through scriptural beliefs and to benefit mankind. And so that leads me to the church. You know, they're from a business perspective, they are my clients. And with those clients, oftentimes they will ask for contributions via an ad for a souvenir journal or tickets for something of that nature. And so you do those in-kind contributions to encourage the people who help to keep your doors open on a 24/7 basis. You know, I'm a small business. And so I support those who support the organization that keep my employees employed 365 days a year.
You have been busy. You have been extremely busy. So you've given me everything that you've done, and I'm going to try to do better myself because I feel a little embarrassed. Now back to the Black folk and the Hispanics and the Native Americans, that we are a dying breed. What can we do as a community at large to kind of help each other out here and to sustain our race, you know, to keep hope alive?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this platform is can be used in that area, providing information, providing education, and linking individuals with resources. Very, very, very helpful. And history has shown it to be quite effective. So I think that's a start.
I think Miriam has a point there. If one community has more resources or abundant resources, that's one thing we do really need to share. I mean, why reinvent the wheel if we don't have to? If Miriam has that resource, why wouldn't she share it with me?
But we have to care. First.
We have to care first.
Starts at the ground level first. That right. Individual has to care. I have some patients that are non-compliant that I've been able to assist with on getting, you know, the road to transplant. And then there's some patients that are just going to do what they want to do. And I respect that as a nurse because I can spend more time, you know, with another patient. But I just say, hey, I've given you the resources and the tools that you need. It's up to you to actually use them. And if you're not going to, just say, hey, I'm okay with coming 3 times a week. You're removing the fluid, shortening my lifetime. You know, that's that. So it has to start with the individual to actually care about making a change.
So BJ, why should we as minorities take note of the invaluable events of our history to expunge destructive programming that does not accurately reflect who we are as a culture.
Okay, well, let me start by saying that a statement that I heard frequently when I was growing up, and that was guard well the avenues to the soul. So what are the avenues to the soul? It's your eyes, your ears, your mouth. What you say, what you hear, what you see will have a huge impact on your soul. And our soul is, in essence, who we are. Every group in America that has been on the receiving end of discrimination and oppression has also had to fight negative and disparaging stereotypes. And so there's been this effort within minority groups to try to control their image. But if you don't have the means of controlling mass communication, then you have little impact on how you are portrayed. And if you never question that portrayal, and you will tend to internalize it, and then in essence, it becomes a self-fulfilling outcome. You become who they say you are. So one of the problems for Black and Brown communities is to have an ability to combat, as you call those what's the question you those negative stereotypes, those the programming, so to speak. What can we do? Well, there are a few things we can do. Individually, we can be more selective over the types of input that we have. As parents, we can be very cautious about what our children see and hear so that we can combat those negative images. Now, obviously, you can't control everything that they see and everything that they're exposed to, but you can reduce the amount of negative messages that they get. You can respectfully challenge people who promote racist and discriminatory remarks. We learned that last week by our very own Rita, who shared with us her experience. You can commit to doing things to uplift your community, which is what this whole segment is all about. Collectively, as a group of people of color, even though it may look bleak right now, and we may actually be going to hell in a handbasket. I hope we don't. I think history will prove that there are always people who will fight that good battle. But the changes have to be done in ways that will involve inclusiveness so that every voice has some input on our sectors in society. And so those are things that we can do individually. Those are things that have to be done collectively, because the conflict that we're seeing and the conflict that has been historic has been between groups that are fighting and struggling to be heard and to be treated fairly against groups that are fighting equally to maintain that dominance. Even if we feel a little hopeless at times, I think what we will see is that when we have this kind of cyclical conflict, there is forward momentum. There is some, no matter how small that is. And I think that's evident by all of us that are on the panel today. If there hadn't been some change, some forward progression, we wouldn't be here today.
So, Sarita, I know you do a lot of work in the community. And oftentimes they're putting on, what do we call it? The healthcare fairs and different things in the churches and stuff. But the people that most need it appear to have a deaf ear. Is there a reason why? Can you help me with that?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I think that the people who attend the health fairs actually attend them to get the things that they can get. So like, I'll give you an example of a back to school health fair. You're talking about poverty and you're talking about supplies that they need for their children. We've also done things on a larger scale, and in those initiatives, and there's a really large one that used to go on pre-pandemic at the George R. Brown, and they would actually walk around the dialysis table and say, oh no, I don't want anything to do with that. And it's there's a certain fear as it relates to dialysis, even when you're exhibiting in a health fair location, because they know it's a deadly disease. But I want to kind of go back and bounce off of some of the things BJ said, because I think respectfully, she was correct in every avenue. One of the things that I look at is I kind of break our communities down into segments. And so when we talk about support, and now I'm speaking specifically to the African-American community and no other community in this regard, we don't even support each other. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at what we are trying to do in survival, you know, we can take health and all of this, but health is an issue that people have. Survival is an issue that everybody, regardless of health, has. And so when we're not even in support of each other, then there is no forward progress. I'd like to open the table with Rita to see if she's experienced it in the same in her community as I've experienced it in my community. But
Sarita, and it is true. It is true. We are individuals. We see ourselves as an individual family. We take care of ourselves. There may be several of us in that family, but it is true. The Latinos, we also have that problem about not seeing the problem in general, but just as an individual, which we need to fix that. I mean, to get that education out. Like you said, at the Georgia Brown, they used to have those big health fairs and people would walk around for, you know, diabetes and high blood pressure. And we would have to tell them, you know, I know you may not be suffering from this, but take it home because you don't know, you know, maybe Abuela's doing this or, you know, your tío has this, your uncle has this, pass it on, you know, and that's how we would always explain it. Take it out to the community. But it is a very true fact what you're stating. It is also in other minority cultures as well. So it's not a something just to the Black community, but also other minorities as well. I don't know what the solution to that is. I mean, we always come back to education, and that's probably what we have to do is educate more, but it's the same for a lot of minority families.
But where did this crab in the barrel syndrome come from?
Is it crab survival? In the barrel, or is it brainwashed?
Well, I'm good with either one, Sarita. It's the same thing. It's a learned behavior, right, BJ?
But I think, how we as people, and that's all groups of people are portrayed, if indeed, as I said before, if Black and brown people are portrayed as being less industrious, that we don't care about ourselves, we don't care about our families, we're more prone to crime.
And some of us are better than the others. You know, we believe that. I'm better than you.
All of us are inferior in all categories. Mm-hmm. If indeed that is what you're constantly fed over and over and over in generations, then you do come to it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You come to believe that. And that's going to be reflected in everything, in our health, our education, our families, every institution, it will be our ability to earn. It's going to be reflected.
So, Marion and Maria, if these recommendations for lifestyle changes are not pursued, mm-hmm. then what do you see as the viability of a race that is already experiencing major population losses?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have to just keep fighting, continue our efforts to provide the information and direct individuals to resources, and not allow the message to die.
Maria?
Yes, I agree with that as well. It's just like if you stop watering the plant, it's going to die eventually. So, I mean, just one step at a time and actually putting a step forward, because if not, we'll lose the entire generation.
Well, Sarita just mentioned that when people come to these fairs and stuff, that they're just, it's almost like they're desensitized. Didn't you say, Sarita, they're coming for what? For what's there, the little trinkets that we give away.
What's in it for me? What's in it for me? That's what they're there for.
So how do we change that? Because those
and they don't realize your health is what's in it for them.
I think as providers, we still, even if, like you say, they're coming for, I mean, I used to work with geriatrics, and trust me, they come for every little piece of trinket they can pick up. I don't know what they need them for, but they pick them up. But just continue. As I'm handing out the pin, I'm like, and so, you talk about diabetes. It's, you need to check your sugar. And they're like, let go of the pin, lady. Let go of the pin. But, I mean, continue to educate and don't get discouraged by that, because as a social worker, sometimes you get discouraged by that. Am I doing enough or am I not doing enough? But I constantly remind myself, I just have to keep going. Somebody somewhere is going to pick something up. So I don't get discouraged by that. I just say, if they're coming for the pin, great, but they're still going to have to listen to the spill. Maybe it may not be five people that hear it, maybe one person, and that person, it makes a difference in their lives. So I just keep chugging away, guys. I know.
Yeah. Well, Serena, I'm feeling a little...
I'm not trying to be Pollyanna. But the reality of it is, if indeed you do help one person, and I truly think when you're doing the health fairs and you're doing the talks and you're educating, and even when you're working one-on-one with patients, you don't always know how that has benefited that person. You can only look and see what you can see at that moment, but you don't know. You know, it could be that piece of paper that's in one of those plastic bags at the health fair that somebody comes back and looks at. Because I have. I've been the recipient of pens and handouts and whatever. And at the time I got it, it didn't mean anything to me. But later on down the road, I pick it up and I act on it.
So well, excuse me. And also, like BJ is saying, and sometimes we don't see the effect right now, but it could be something that goes to the next generation. I mean, that little pebble that falls in the water sometimes makes that ripple. We don't see it right away. We don't see the effects of it, but it does happen sometimes. So I guess we got to take our wins wherever we can get them.
So Sarita, from an economic perspective, you know, you talked about this last week. You talked about that we may lose a generation and how we have to start with pre-K and all the, you know. So how do we do that? How do we incorporate that into our governmental system, into the schools, et cetera?
Well, first of all, you have to meet them where they are. And so if we were to compare, let's say my generation, Maria, I'm not picking on you, but Maria's generation, we know how to type. These youngsters, they don't type, they text. When you put them in front of a keyboard, they are not functionally literate in terms of typing a paper, but you put them on a cell phone and they can text extremely well. And so the whole paradigm has to change. The way we reach them is not through the traditional forms of media as all of us know it. It's through social media. It's through tweeting and TikTok and all of the modern things that we generally had never anything to do with before this time. So you've got to change program. You've got to create the message in a way that's totally uniquely different, that catches their attention. And you have to put it out there in a way that they're going to absorb it. Because unfortunately, whatever they see on social media, they believe is true. And so if your message is not out there, you're just lost. And these are the people that are making the decisions on our parents and other people as far as what their health care is as it relates to kidney disease, dialysis treatment, and everything else. And so when you're looking at 40 and above, if they're responsible for their parents, they're not looking at traditional forms of media. They're looking at TikTok and all of that. BJ mentioned earlier about we don't control the media. Well, we can. We can control it through these new forms where African-Americans have had the money and the options. They've chosen not to invest into the radio stations, the TV stations, and the newspapers so that we can deliberately get out our message. And those newspapers, like in Houston, that we've purchased, they spend more time selling ads. They have no staff to actually write articles, cover the stories, and interview people doing things. So either we have to assimilate to the new form, or we got to invest in the old form, but it has to be staffed and properly funded.
So you're saying that we're not investing in ourselves. That's basically what's going on. We're not supporting ourselves.
And Sarita's very true. I mean, I've seen some, you know, sunsets. So it is true. I have to keep up. I have to keep up to be viable as a viable social worker. I have to keep up. TikTok, I don't know so much, but I have to keep up as a professional. We know, all of us as professionals, we know we have to keep up with the time to meet the needs of our patients. You know, our patients range from what, 18 or above, unless you work in geriatric, with children and stuff. But we have to keep up with the times to be viable ourselves. We have to keep up.
So this is a program that's much needed. All right, guys, so we're getting ready to wrap this up and I need your final thoughts. But now next week, Maria, who is going to be in the house next week? Who we got coming on board?
Dr. Mary Washington, rapper MD. Look her up, look her up. Let's get her pumped up.
All right. Now she's going to bring about, I mean, she's going to bring with her a plethora of experience and analysis about why we do what we do as a people and how we can reverse the script. So I'm just really excited. Mary, you know Dr. Washington?
I certainly do.
Okay. And I've heard only good things about her, right?
She's real, though. That one thing that, the listeners need to know about Dr. Washington, she's going to talk to you in terms that you understand. She's not going to be saying these big words. She's going to break it all the way down.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your final thoughts, BJ, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, respect yourself. As the song says, if you don't respect yourself, nobody's going to respect you. So that would be my takeaway today is, people, take a moment, go and listen, pull up the old Respect Yourself by the Staples.
Yes. All right. All right. All right, Marion.
I'm going to echo those same sentiments. Respect yourself. Take care of yourself. That's how you show respect to you.
All righty. Rita?
I'm going to do, everyone must choose one or two pains. The pain of discipline or the pain of regret. That's a quote by Jim Roth. So pick the side.
Love it. Maria.
You do not have to see the whole staircase just to take one step. So take one step, you'll get to the top.
All right. And of course, my favorite, Sarita. What say you?
Well, I would say if rapper MD was Jay-Z, then I'd take this hat off and make my hair match for next week. But since that's not the case, I'll tell everybody to have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Well said, Sarita. Well said. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week on another episode of Kicking It with Kidneys. And join us next week where rapper MD will be, what you guys, in the house. Okay, have a great
day. In the house.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week. The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.